Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tanirjita prana mano vacho drisho. Jidasanan shanta samana vigraham. Paremale brahmani yojitadmana. Surasure yoda drishesmanarada. Tanirjita prana mano vacho drisho. Jidasanan chanta samana vigraham. Paremale brahmani yojitadmana. Surasure yo dadishesmanarada. Tan, all of them. Nirjita, completely controlled. Prana, the life air. By the pranayama process. Mana, mind. Vacha, words. Drisha, and vision. Jita asanan, who conquered the yogic asana or sitting posture. Shanta, pacified. Samana, straight. Vigrahan, whose bodies. Pare, transcendental. Amale, free from all material contamination. Brahmani, in the supreme. Yojita, engaged. Atmana, whose minds. Sura Asura Idya, worshipped by the demons and by the demigods. Dadrishe, saw. Sma, in the past. Narada, the great sage Narada. Translation: after practicing the yoga san for mystic yoga, the prachetas manage to control their life air, mind, words, and external vision. Thus, by the pranayama process, they were completely relieved of material attachment. By remaining perpendicular, they could concentrate their minds on the uppermost Brahman. While they were practicing this pranayama, the great sage Narada, who was worshipped both by demons and by demigods, came to see them. Purport: in this verse, the words pareyamale are significant. The realization of Brahman is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. The absolute truth is realized in three phases: impersonal effulgence, Brahman, localized Paramatman, the supreme personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. In his prayers, Lord Shiva concentrated upon the personal features of Parabrahman as described in personal terms as snigda pravridganam. Shamam, Bhagavatam 4:24-45. Following the instructions of Lord Shiva, the prachetas also concentrated their mind on the Sham Shundar form of the Supreme Brahman. Although impersonal Brahman, Paramatma Brahman, and Brahman as the Supreme Person are all on the same transcendental platform, the personal feature of the Supreme Brahman is the ultimate goal and the last word in transcendence. The great sage Narada travels everywhere he goes to the demons and the demigods and is equally respected. He is consequently described herein as Surasuredya, worshipped both by demons and by demigods. For Narada Muni, the door of every house is open. Although there is perpetual animosity between the demons and the demigods, Narada Muni is welcomed everywhere. Narada is considered one of the demigods, of course, and the word Devarshi means the saintly person among the demigods, but not even the demons envy Narada Muni, therefore he is equally worshipped both by demons and by demigods. A perfect Vaishnava's position should be just like Narada Muni's, completely independent and unbiased. Tanirjita prana manova chodrisho jitasanan shanta samana vigrahan paremale brahmani yojitatmana surasure jodadrishes manarada. After practicing the yoga asana for mystic yoga, the prachetas manage to control their life air, mind, words, and external vision. Thus, by the pranayama process, they were completely relieved of material attachment. By remaining perpendicular, they could concentrate their minds on the uppermost Brahman. While they were practicing this Brahman, the great sage Narada, who is worshipped both by demons and by demigods, came to see them. So they're continuing their spiritual activities, the Prachetas. In the beginning they had the instruction of Lord Shiva, and they performed austerities, then entered household life, and again became renounced, going to this holy place where the sage Jajali lived. And now they are fortunate to have the darshan of Narad Muni, who always appears in opportune times and gives some relevant instruction. Again and again Narad Muni appears. He even, you know, instructed Kamsa, told him what was going to happen. so he sometimes gives instruction to demons, sometimes gives to demigods, mostly of course to demigods, because they're receptive to the message of the Lord and the great sages. But the demons also recognize him to be a powerful sage. So sadhus and sages in those times were clearly recognized by all. Everyone was in one sense afraid of them, because they knew their great powers, and therefore everyone was also respectful towards them. Either they were respectful out of love and appreciation, or respectful out of their fear of such personalities. But in any case, the power of the saintly person was understood, and therefore everyone had to take this into consideration in their lives. Just like even personalities like Jarasandha, who was a big demon, he followed Vedic principles and he was respectful to sadhus and brahmanas when Lord Krishna and Bhima and Arjuna went to meet Jarasandha. You can go to that place, actually. It's called Rajgir. It's in Bihar. There's a Magad. South Bihar is called Magad. North Bihar is called Mithila. And very South Bihar, we mentioned it, Jharkhanda. Central Bihar is actually Magad, but it's south of the Ganges. So that place is very arid, dry place, Rajgir. It's very scorching hot in the summer. Gaya is near to that place. Because Gaya is the hottest place in India in the summer. So this very, very scorching hot place. Anyhow, it's very arid, and Rajgir means king of hills. So that there's a very flat place, but suddenly there's very jagged mountain sticking out, a rocky, barren mountain. And there's a place there where Lord Krishna and Arjuna and Bhim landed. Their chariot flew through the air, you see, and it landed there in Magad. The screeching came screeching to a halt, and the chariot wheels made very sharp indentations. The sharp indentations in the rock. So you can see this, you know, it's a very flat rock face, but it's got these very long marks of chariot wheels in the rock. In that place they came and they asked Jarasandha for some charity, and even though he was a great demon, he wanted to give in charity to the brahmanas. So he said, well, whatever you want, I'll give you. And then of course they revealed their identity and they asked for a fight, and he agreed, but he agreed to fight only with Bhima, because Krishna, he said, you're It's unclear your position and what caste you belong to. I mean, you're just a cowherd boy. I can't fight with you. And Arjuna said, you're too young, not equal match for me. So he fought Bhima, and of course, we know the story. 28 days, wasn't it? They were fighting. And finally, Lord Krishna gave the clue how to bifurcate his body like that. He took it by taking a twig. Lord Krishna ripped it down the middle, bifurcated it. So he got the clue, Bhima got the clue, how to kill Jarasandha, because Jarasandha means join. Sandhya Arati, the joining of the day and the night, evening, twilight, Sandhya Arati. So Sandhya is a joining. By Jara, the witch, she found his body. He was born in two parts and his father threw him away. And she found his body and she joined the two parts together. So he became Jarasandha. So Bhima took him like that, put food on one leg, and lifted the other leg, and ripped down the center. So each side, one eye, one arm, one leg like that. So he was finished in that way. But anyway, he was a follower of Vedic principles. It is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the statement is there, that formerly even kings like Jarasandha and others strictly followed the Vedic principles. But because they didn't recognize Krishna as the Supreme Lord, therefore they're considered as demons, and they fell into degraded position. Of course, he was ultimately liberated because of the mercy of the Lord, but he had become so inimical towards Krishna. Actually, there is one place in the 8th canto of Prabhupada mentions, there's a verse which mentions that at one stage Lord Brahma, he hadn't seen the Supreme Lord, but he heard about the Lord from proper authorities, saintly persons, acharyas. Therefore, it's considered that he could see the Lord and he could understand the Lord because he heard from proper source. Whereas Prabhupada comments that persons like Shishupal, Dantavakra, Jarasandha, they saw the Lord, right in front of them. They had so much chance to associate with him, but they couldn't recognize his position. So therefore, just sometimes people say, have you seen Krishna? Have you personally met Krishna? But in that personal meeting of Krishna is not actually, guarantee that one will understand who is Krishna. One may meet Krishna and consider him like Jarasandha did, that he's some, outcast, or he's not properly situated. Shishupal, same thing, when there was in the Rajasuya sacrifice, Sahadev proposed that Krishna was the person to be worshipped, he was the most exalted personality. It was challenged by Shishupal that he has, no standing, we don't know his proper family, like this. So they were just basing on external platform, external designations. They couldn't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas there are so many great devotees throughout the ages who heard properly from parampara, therefore they've been able to understand who is Krishna. So actually hearing from the proper source with submission and respect proper inquiries is much more powerful even than seeing face to face. Although seeing face to face, no doubt, if one is in proper consciousness, then that is the most exalted. But if one is not in proper consciousness, what is it? He will just make mistakes. So therefore, hearing is the most important sense in spiritual life. Hearing is the first part of bhakti, the first process of bhakti, and we should always endeavor to hear from saintly persons. So therefore the devotees, they always inquired from Narad Muni. There are so many instances where great devotees are being instructed by him, and Even if one is not able to hear or appreciate his instruction properly, at least if one can be respectful towards him. So this is a fact in dealing with the devotees. Even if materialists in general, they cannot understand what the devotees are saying, and they cannot follow, cannot apply in their own lives the instructions of the devotees, still if they respect the devotees, they are benefited. If they respect the devotees or they give some donation to the devotees, or if they just touch a book, or in some way they do something favorable toward Krishna or Krishna's devotees, then this is greatly for their benefit. So Narad Muni, he also was compassionate to the demons. Sometimes he would visit them, just like the devotees are going out preaching. So Narad, he was also going to all places, and even the demons, he was unbiased. He didn't have some hatred towards them because they're demons, but he saw them all as the servants of the Lord. So he was also kind enough to visit them, and even though they didn't take his instruction so seriously, still they didn't apply all his instructions in their life, still they had respect, and this was for their benefit. So Narad Muni, then, he travels everywhere, spiritual world, material world, and visiting all kinds of persons. Another example of a person who respected Brahmanas was Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj, he was approached by Vamana for 3 steps of land, and he vowed to give everything that Brahmana wanted. So his spiritual master, Sukracharya, he advised him that this is actually Vishnu, and he will take everything from you. In the name of taking 3 steps of land, he will take everything. And Bali Maharaj said, let him take everything, I don't mind. But it is our family tradition that we give to the Brahmanas, and I've given my promise, I'm not going to break my promise, no matter what happens. So because of his strong faith in rendering service to the Brahmanas, he got the blessings of the Lord. Although he lost everything, still he got the lotus foot of the Lord on his head, and he surrendered everything in this way to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as a result of this, the Lord blessed him, and he gave him his own planet. In this way, Bali Maharaj, actually, although born in a demoniac family and performing very demoniac activities, still he was saved, and he got the blessings of Krishna. So the demons, even the demons, if they somehow they have some respect for the Supreme Lord, even if it's just out of some social etiquette or formality, they're benefited and blessed. So in this way, the devotees are moving in the society, and they're thinking of the welfare of everyone. Just like Krishna, samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshusti na priya ye bhajanti tu mam bhakcha mai te teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, and I'm not partial to anyone. I'm equal to all, but if one renders service to me in devotion, he is a friend, he is in me, and I'm a friend to him. So Krishna is seeing everyone as his part and parcel, but he's not forcing us to serve him or love him. He leaves that up to the individual. But if one does serve Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates very nicely. But if one ignores Krishna, then Krishna also doesn't pay much attention to that person. But as soon as that person changes his mentality and shows some interest in Krishna, immediately Krishna reciprocates. So Krishna is a person, we are persons, and that personal relationship is the most important thing. As Prabhupada is stressing here in the first portion of the purport, because it's mentioned that the Prachetas, they could concentrate their minds on the uppermost Brahman. So Prabhupada is explaining it. That's all right, Brahman. But there are Brahman, the word Brahman can be used very broadly also to refer to all aspects of transcendence. Therefore, there is impersonal Brahman, Paramatma Brahman, and Brahman is a supreme person. So Prabhupada is stressing that there. They were actually focused on Shyamchandra or Krishna, because they were following the instructions of Lord Shiva, and Prabhupada has quoted one of the verses spoken by Lord Shiva, describing the personal feature of Param Brahman. So, Brahman, that is all right, but we have to understand what is the real Brahman platform, and that is to be engaged in devotional service to Krishna. So they were also practicing pranayama, very rigid discipline. It seems they were standing up, perpendicular, and they were, isn't that right? Perpendicular means standing up, right? Horizontal, that is flat. Perpendicular, that is like that. So they remained standing and practicing pranayama and focusing their attention on Krishna. A very rigid austerity, having great determination, but it attracted the presence of Narad Muni. And we see also that in other cases, great austerities attracted great saintly persons. There are many instances that devotees would do that austerity, just like Hiranyakashipu attracted Brahma by his austerities, and Brahma more or less had to give him benedictions that he could, you know, that he wouldn't be killed in day or night on the land and the sea or in the air by any man-made weapon. Like so many benedictions he gave him, but ultimately Lord Nrisimhadev was able to kill him without breaking those benedictions. Lord Shiva, he was attracted to come by some time by his devotees' austerities. For example, Vrikasura was cutting off his flesh and offering it into the fire as oblation to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva had to come and ask him to stop this horrible activity, and he said, "I'll give you any benediction you like." He said, "Give me the benediction, whoever's head I touch will fall off immediately." So Lord Shiva said, "All right, just stop this horrible austerity." So as soon as he got the benediction, he tried to touch Lord Shiva's head. And Lord Shiva had to flee, had to take shelter. And that's the nature of a demon also, very ungrateful, very greedy. He just, you know, somebody gives him something, and then immediately, you know, he just wants to use for his own purposes, and he doesn't care about the person who gave it. So in that way, Lord Shiva fled, and he took shelter of Lord Vishnu, who took the form of a small Brahmin boy. And he simply convinced Vrikasura, because Vrikasura was not very intelligent. So he just told him that this is a useless benediction, and Lord Shiva has no power. And test for yourself. Touch your own head. Touched his own head and fell off. So this is an example of how Lord Shiva easily gives benediction, and how satisfy his devotee who's performing austerities. Similarly, Lord Krishna appeared. He appeared as Prishni Garba before Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was performing severe austerities because he wanted to get his kingdom back. So he went to the forest under the guidance of Narad Muni, and there he was worshipping some deity of the Lord, chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he was reduced his eating. First he was eating only these berries, leaves, things that one finds in the forest. Then he stopped that and he was only drinking water. Then he stopped that, he was only breathing air. And he was only breathing air like once a month, some phenomenal kind of austerity, standing on one leg. And this, he was so powerful, when he pressed his toe down, the whole universe became disturbed. So the demigods appealed to the Lord, and the Lord appeared there, and he told them, take any benediction you like. And then he said, actually, while looking for broken glass, I found the greatest jewel. So actually, I don't want any material benediction. I just want to be engaged in your devotional service eternally. So the Lord said, anyway, you take the kingdom. And he gave him a whole planet, Dhruvaloka. So in that way, devotees, by their austerities, they can attract the Lord or attract a particular demigod accordingly. But actually, one shouldn't worship the demigods for material benefit. One should worship them to help him advance in Krishna consciousness, just like the gopis worship goddess Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband. Or when Rukmini, she was going to be married, and that she went to the temple of Durga, but then she prayed that Lord Krishna would come and kidnap her and take her away. And of course Lord Krishna, he responded by coming. So demigod worship is only advised with a view to advance in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise it's simply a source of misery and entanglement in this material world. If one's goal in life is just to get sense gratification, satisfy his material body, then he will be entangled more and more in karma. And if one's worship is motivated in that way, then this is considered low class. But if one's motivation is to please Krishna, to sacrifice everything to Krishna, then he will be liberated from all kinds of entanglement. He'll not have to take birth again in this material world. Or if he takes birth again, he will be a devotee and he will continue from where he left off. So we should try to develop this kind of pure motivation in our activities. Any kind of hankering for mundane sense gratification or any plans for the same or over-endeavor for mundane achievements and accumulation of material possessions, they are actually not going to bring us happiness. They are going to bring us lamentation and grief. They are going to get in the way of our spiritual progress. Anything that gets in the way of our spiritual progress should be kicked out. Should be kicked out. All the nonsense should be kicked out. And one should just focus himself fully on serving Krishna. Ideally, in helping to push forward the Sankirtan movement. We should all be in that consciousness of how to give our utmost to the Sankirtan movement, because it's a very ecstatic movement. It's non-different from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's extension of his energy. It's coming in his parampara, this ISKCON movement. It's simply meant to benedict the world. So we should join in wholeheartedly. This is where the real bliss is available, isn't it? You know, often devotees, they're doing different services. Now, of course, all services are blissful, but when one goes out and gets a taste for Sankirtan, preaching, book distribution, Harinam, some outgoing activity where he's giving Krishna to others, this is very enlivening. One feels strengthened in his spiritual life. He feels more convinced about Krishna consciousness. Often you hear that the devotees, you know, some devotee hasn't gone out for, you know, weeks or months or whatever, and you know, he's just stayed back at the temple or he's on the farm or something, and sometimes feels things are a bit dry. It happens, isn't it, that devotees who don't go out at all on Sankirtan, they become a bit sort of dried up and start losing the taste and start thinking, oh, there's so many problems, and you get into differences of opinion with other devotees. That very can get very much onto the mental platform, get bewildered. So therefore it's necessary for us to go out to do some preaching activity, get a breath of fresh air, so like get out and get into what they say, the fire, getting fired up. So this is this is medicine, just like we were having Padayatra last year, isn't it? And so many devotees came that, you know, had perhaps they weren't so active at other times, and they became so enlivened to be out there on the road and you know, going on Harinam and going to standing at the book table or distributing prasadam, became so enlivened. So this is the Anandam Buddhivardhanam. This is the ocean of transcendental bliss, ever increasing ocean of transcendental bliss. So we need to make that endeavor to go out and preach, even if only for a short time. Even if we only go once a week, we'll get a great boost. Prabhupada actually said that everyone should go on the Sankirtan party at least once a week. And he was referring He was, when he said that, actually, he was talking about women with young children. Because sometimes, you know, mothers, they're so much engaged in looking after the children, they say, don't have time to go out. Don't have time to do service or go out. Or I can do a little service in the temple, but can't go out. But Prabhupada was saying they should go out. One mother can mind all the children, and they all go out on Sankirtan, all the others, and take it in terms like to mind the children. At least once a week, Prabhupada said, they can go for Sankirtan. So this, Prabhupada said this because he knew that this is important for our spiritual health. In order to keep in touch with our preaching mood. See, otherwise we may lose contact and miss the real essence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. So it's therefore recommended we should follow in the footsteps of Narad Muni. Whether a person is a sannyasi, brahmachari, or grihastha, he should engage somehow in preaching activities. And in this way, get the real nectar, get the real taste. Of course, all services are important. They're all to be done. But one should do that activity, which is actually a genuine and necessary service for the Sankirtan movement. One should try to do the needful. Prabhupada often said, do the needful. So the most needed thing actually is to go out, preach, distribute books as much as possible. We should endeavor to increase the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's literatures, because these literatures are none different from Krishna. Anybody who gets a book, he's getting Krishna, taking Krishna to his home. Not only taking Krishna to his home, but it's like he's getting the opportunity to listen to Krishna speaking for hours and days and weeks, isn't it? So what better opportunity could there be for spiritual advancement? And get the chance to hear Krishna all the time. You just have to study these books regularly. So this is the greatest gift that one can give. And it is said, Dadati Pratigrinati Guya Makyati Prachati in the Upadeshamrita. Six kinds of loving exchanges: giving gifts, accepting gifts, revealing one's mind and confidence, hearing others reveal their mind and confidence, giving prasad, accepting prasad. So Prabhupada comments in the purport that before he's distributing books, that they're actually giving the greatest gift to people, and they're accepting donations. People are reciprocating by giving donations. So this is comes under the category of giving gifts and accepting gifts. This is the most significant way of doing that. And of course, we're also distributing prasadam, and getting prasadam like that, receiving prasadam. In that way, there are different kinds of loving exchanges between the devotees, and so Prabhupada was even including the non-devotees or the karmis in that exchange that the devotees are giving to them and they're giving to the devotees. So naturally they become benefited. So just like the demons, even though they had no spiritual credits, still because of their respect to Narada and their service to Narada, that was purifying for them and elevating for them. So it may take a long time for such persons to become purified, but they have to start somewhere. So in the same way, when we go out to distribute books, we don't find that everyone just automatically becomes a devotee. It may take a long time, but they have to start somewhere. And every time they contact a devotee, provided they're not inimical or offensive, it's a benefit for them. You know. So when you go out, every day when you go out, if you say distributing, you meet some people who've never seen the devotees before. I was in Sydney distributing in that mall there. What is it? Pitt Street, isn't it? Pitt Street Mall. And I met one young fellow from Donegal, Ireland. Donegal, Ireland, which is a county. Donegal is it's a sort of a remote corner of Ireland on the northwest coast. It's a very sort of wild kind of a place, barren kind of a. And he'd never in his life heard of Hare Krishna. Never in his life heard of Hare Krishna. Never seen a devotee. And he'd been all his life living in Donegal, and he'd gotten a job in Tasmania. He was there fishing, I think, Tasmania. So that's also a remote place, isn't it? Tasmania. So he came up to Sydney, you know, just to see the big city. And sure enough, you know, he met somebody on the street that gave him a, who sold him a book, took a book. So first contact. So every day we meet somebody like that, first contact. Then we also meet some people. They've seen the devotees, and they, but they never, you know, came close enough to the devotees to get the opportunity to take a book. So we meet some of those people, and they take books. And then we meet people who've had books before, and they like them, and they'll take another book. We also meet some of those people. Some people are very much inspired and enthusiastic, you know, to meet the devotees. Every day you meet some people of that category. They're actually very grateful to meet the devotee, and they're very interested. And some, you know, they're ready to come to the temple. Some people have been to the temple already. So you meet people in all kinds of categories. So a devotee, you know, he has to be unbiased, and he has to be willing to help all. Even sometimes there are people who have come, been devotees, and they've gone away. Then you meet them, and you know that's a new inspiration in their life, and they may come back again to Krishna consciousness because of that contact. So in that way, the devotee should, he should always be thinking that he has a responsibility to give Krishna to others. This is clearly the instruction of Lord Chaitanya. Yari deko tarika Krishna upadesh amaragya guruha tarayadesh. You become guru and deliver this country. Who did he give this instruction to? Yasoda Dula. Who did he give the instruction to? No. He's not. Of course he told Lord Nityananda to pray. Who did he give this instruction to? Huh? Kurma. Who was Kurma? He was a Brahmana, yeah. He was a Brahmana? Grihastha. He was a Grihastha. He was a householder. And what was his position as a householder? What was his situation? Don't know? Yeah. Why did he want to leave? Because he was suffering. He was a suffering householder. He was miserable in family life. He was thinking, there's so many problems. I'm just tortured in this situation. I've got to get out of here. That was his, that's who he was. So there may be others also feeling the same way. You see. So what was the remedy? What was the remedy? Go out and preach. This was the remedy given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He didn't tell him, leave your family altogether. He told, actually, when he suggested that, Lord Chaitanya said, you know, stop talking like, don't talk like that again. He said, stop talking like a crazy fellow. You know, you have your responsibilities. You stay, but you always chant Hare Krishna, and go and preach as well. Whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. And to preach doesn't mean you have to, you know, fly all over the world. You see? Of course, you know, some people may be doing it, but it doesn't mean, you know, everybody has to do that. To preach, everyone's coming in contact with so many people. So when you're interacting with other people, you have to give them Krishna, or you have to do something, give some time for preaching activity. So everyone should organize his life in such a way that he does some preaching. And the more he does, the more blissful he'll be, the more enlivened and inspired. But granted, you know, there are different services have to be done, and you know, devotees have varied kinds of situations. Some have more heavy family responsibilities, and say they're more weighed down, maybe have more children, or they're not maybe so wealthy, or whatever, they're maybe struggling more. But still, they should give time to preach. If they give time to preach, they'll get more enlivenment, more, you know, more spirit of Krishna consciousness, and it will be easier for them to tackle their problems and to cope with the stresses and strains of household life or whatever their problem is. With the household, some brahmachari also, they have so many problems, mental problems, and can't focus their mind, isn't it? You know, so sometimes some brahmacharis, they're thinking, oh, if I could just become a householder, then everything would be, you know, fine. Some brahmacharinis are thinking like that, isn't it? But then entering the household, like, oh, then, you know, this is worse. This is worse. If I could again undo the knot and become free, then I would be happy. But it's not a question, you see, of actually being in this ashram or that ashram so much. Of course, that is, you know, one has to be in some ashram or the other. And as far as possible, the one which seems the most, you know, suitable, one can be in. But it's not the ashram in itself which is going to make some, you know, ideal situation, but it's the Krishna consciousness of the devotee. So if one is engaged in preaching activity, that gives him strength and determination, because he has to try to convince other people. So he has to make some effort, and he has to build up his strength and enthusiasm to do that. So if he makes that effort, that's a kind of austerity, and it gives him a lot of shakti, gives the devotee a lot of shakti. So he can actually cope with his own mind and his own senses much more effectively. Because he's taking it like a greater challenge, a greater task to actually convince the non-devotee. So in the process, automatically he can control his own mind and senses. Whereas if he doesn't try to convince the non-devotees and to preach, then he's become a little weak in that sense. He's maybe a little afraid of them, or afraid what will happen if he goes out and he tries to preach. So he loses some determination, and then it becomes more difficult for him to deal with his own mind and senses. He doesn't have the strength or determination to do it. So it's maybe a little hard to go out there in the beginning. Seems like a bit of a, you know, something that's too difficult, can't do it, never done it, whatever. But if a person goes out and he just, you know, applies his attention, and makes that endeavor and just prays to Krishna, have confidence Krishna will help us, then he'll see Krishna will help. Krishna will send people who are interested. They'll take some books. If the devotee just tries hard, if he's sincere. It's not some special magic. Of course, naturally a devotee becomes more determined, more convinced, then he can be more effective in actually convincing the non-devotees to take books. But even if he's not so expert, Krishna will send so many opportunities. So, Prabhupada's desire, strong desire, was that we distribute these transcendental literatures. So, we should all give some time for this activity. If everybody gives some time, even if it's only 1 hour, 2 hours a week, there will be big increase in books distributed, and this will be enlivening. This will increase the number of devotees. It will increase the number of persons coming in contact with Krishna. It will bring more persons to the temple, and it will make more devotees. And the more devotees there are, the more enlivening, inspiring it is. Every town and village. There's only devotees living now in 2 or 3 cities in this South Island, right? Christchurch, almost everyone living in Christchurch. Some couple living in Nelson. And maybe someone living in Dunedin, like that. And, you know, some devotees traveling around here and there. But we want to see devotees in every town and village. So we have to push forward. with relentless determination. So that means everyone should participate as much as possible. And you'll get more bliss from this, more inspiration. Yes. So, following in the footsteps of Narad Muni, always preaching Krishna consciousness. That's the main problem to get around, really, the one's own lack of determination or one's own tendency to avoid having to go out, because, you know, initially it's a little difficult, you know, just like in the morning getting out of the Sankirtan van, even for seasoned Sankirtan devotees, in the morning just getting out there, it's like it requires a, you know, it's just like say diving into some, you know, cold water pool, but one has to realize that this is the desire of Lord Chaitanya, it's the desire of Srila Prabhupada, and of course just by doing it a bit, you know, one will get the taste. So even though it may be a little hard to get out there, one knows that still there's a lot of nectar out there, there's a lot of taste out there. So a fortunate person, you know, he can get out there. So how do we need those who are more convinced have to preach to those who are not so convinced. And that's how this movement is going on. Prabhupada said it's a pushing movement. He said Lord Chaitanya was, you know, pushing this movement. And Prabhupada himself, he was pushing. He was always pushing, isn't it? Pushing like anything. So we need some devotees to push the other devotees. And it's a push in a loving way. I mean, it's for everyone's benefit. And so the leaders have to actually preach this Sankirtan. We have to preach book distribution. We have to convince the devotees. Because if all the devotees go out, even a little bit, we can have so much increase. And everyone's spiritual life will be strengthened by it also. So if the devotees are unable themselves to find the determination or the conviction to go out, then those who are more enlivened, they should say, okay, come on, come with me today. You know, we'll go together and, you know, give some association to that devotee and, you know, just help him get his feet wet a bit. And we have to understand priorities. This was Prabhupada's, it was his principal priority. He gave so much time for translating the books, and he gave so much stress to printing them and so much stress to distributing them, and he kept telling the devotees to double it and double it and double it again. So he just kept pushing them like that. So we have to, you know, if we study, you know, Prabhupada's letters, Prabhupada's instructions, conversations, then we get a clear idea of what he wanted. So we have to get our priorities right.
Yesterday, when we were going in Harinama, I couldn't find a park in Karm, thinking, oh, maybe I'll just go to the restaurant and help out there. And then I saw a devotee walking along the street. Today, coming in Harinama, I went with there, went back to get some flies, and as I was walking up the street, this boy came up to me and said, oh, I chanting in the square. He said, I hardly ever see you there. He said, I've only seen you about once or something like that. And he was all excited. He came down and watched the Harinam. And as we were going around to another part, there was this old lady man about 55, 60. And I gave him a fly and they said, oh, it's so nice to see happy people. They said, you know, nobody looks happy anymore. It was just so nice. And they were smiling. And you know, the lady gave him a hug and said, God bless you, and that sort of thing. And they were like really touched by the fact that the devotees were out there. And I said, yeah, that's all the world has to do, is just chant the whole thing and I'll be happy. So the people, they actually really appreciate it. Sometimes the devotees think that people think they're strange or whatever, and they get put off by that, but actually the people really like it.
It's a fact, every time you go out, you meet some people, you know, really appreciate the devotees. I met a man yesterday And, you know, he'd had some of our books before, and, you know, some small books. And he said, you know, he said, I got the books before, he said, but I wasn't really ready for them, he said, but he said, now I feel much more open, much more ready. He said, I'd like to get this big book. He took one of the hardcover books. He said, you know, he said, I really feel I'm ready. I can you know, get a lot out of this book now. So, he's a fact. People are, you know, searching. Some people are actually really serious to find about spiritual life. And by that, when they meet the devotee, that that's the thing that really tips the balance and brings them into Krishna consciousness. But that's how everybody joined, after all, isn't it? By somehow meeting the devotee. So, you know, we have to make endeavor to go out and extend Krishna's mercy to one and all. And we shouldn't be complacent and think we're doing enough. We can't rest until the whole world is Krishna conscious, you see. There's always some preaching to do. Any other question? Comment? Yeah, that's true. I was at a seminar in Vrindavan. Marinamananda was speaking. He said that in the beginning we only did a few books a day. But after, you know, a year or so, or a year or two, we got up to 10 books a day. And then we were going on like that for another couple of years, trying to, and we got up to 20 books a day. And then we kept going. We got up to 50 books a day, like that. And then still keep going another few years, up to 100 books a day. So he said it's just by, you know, strong desire and constant practice. And the marathon, what he was doing, was it last year, the year before, he was doing 600 books a day. One day he did 900 books. 900 big books in a day. One devotee. Means a whole van full of books, right? It's inconceivable. 900 books in a day. You know, he went out on Sankirtan for, I don't know, maybe he was out for 15 hours or something that day, right, in the marathon. So that means every hour, how many books? 60 books? 60 books an hour. If he were, for 15 hours, 60 books an hour. That's a book a minute for 15 hours. It's pretty amazing. But he said he started, you know, he just started off in like that, 5 books, 10 books.
And what else we were saying, you know, that when he first started very small, and when Krishna sees the determination, and he just forgets small.
Yeah, because the devotee actually becomes very powerful by doing that austerity and by practicing and by focusing his mind constantly, he becomes powerful. I mean, just like these prachetas, they were doing a certain austerity, you know, standing a perpendicular and pranayama. So they became very powerful. And they could, you know, associate with great personalities, like they could attract. Or Dhruva Maharaj, he became powerful, he attracted the Lord. So in the same way, by that, doing that austerity, you know, constantly, the devotee becomes empowered, and he becomes able to convince people. Prabhupada was powerful like that. He underwent tremendous austerity, had tremendous determination. He became so powerful that he convinced so many people all over the world to completely change their lifestyle, to become devotees. I mean, it's amazing feat that he accomplished. So if we follow in according to what he wanted, if we go on just trying to satisfy that desire and keep that uppermost in our mind, we can also become empowered by Krishna. So that's how book distributors can get up to be able to distribute so many books, because of the strong desire to satisfy Guru and Krishna. And just repeatedly, practicing that. And Krishna can do so many wonderful things. He can empower, and he likes to see the devotees glorified, so he empowers devotees. If the devotee is willing to surrender to him fully, then he likes to empower the devotee and see the devotee glorified. See, Hari Namanandi is not a sannyasi or a GBC or assembled president or whatever. He's a devotee. He's gone out on the street, and he's just on the street every day. This boy, Navina Nirada, last year he went on Sankirtan 365 days. Shows how enlivened he is to go out 365 days. And finally he could defeat Harinam Nanda.
I listened to the tape by Hannah, and he was saying that one of the inspirations that they have is that devotees were constantly hearing about preaching and book distribution, and Hannah was showing distribution, and the impetus is always there, why is always being reminded. He was saying that every day they're listening to tapes about book distribution and about preaching, and they're saying that keep their one point of attention.
That's important. It's just like in the army, the generals and the officers, they have to preach to the to the rank and file, isn't it? They have to preach, so that the leaders should preach, and the distributors should preach to the other devotees. Yeah? If the distributor's getting some enlivening experience, he should come back and should tell the other devotees about it. So it's very nice. Come out with me. In this way, the nectar of preaching activity should be shared by all, and should be experienced by all. That means more blissful devotees will come. The more blissful the devotees are, more blissful devotees are going out there to give their association to the conditioned souls. The more conditioned souls will become attracted, and they'll also want to experience the nectar, because they see the devotees happy, the devotees convinced, the devotees enthusiastic. The devotees got something that I don't have. I'm just bewildered here. I don't know what I'm doing. Morose, isn't it? People are in a morose, bored consciousness. And they see someone who's really bright-faced and sure of what he's doing, that's a real help to them. It can lift them right up. People who are a little receptive, they can be pulled right out of their material conditioning by the association of the devotee. Devotees like touchstone. It can transform a bewildered person into a Krishna conscious devotee.
Can I tell you, I actually had a hiccup today.
Yeah.
It's just, I was on Sankirtan in Dunedin, and sold a painting to this man. He just was visiting his friend in the garage, and he came in, he saw the paintings, and he brought it to me. And at the time, he said to me, I feel very fortunate to be able to buy this painting. I said, you are very fortunate. And for some reason, I gave him my phone number on Christchurch. I said, if you're ever up here, give me a call, because he said, I'd like to see you again. I said, we're going to come to Dunedin once a year. So on Sunday night, I got a phone call, and it was him, and he said he was coming through on his way to pick them, and he'd like to have a look at the painting. And he was just going to be here for an hour in Christchurch. And he said, should I come around and have a look at them? I said, I said, I'll meet you at a restaurant downtown if you like, and we'll have a look there. So yesterday it was at 4 o'clock, and I had to dash off, and I forgot to wash my tea bag off, so I went down to GoFold and had my calm clothes on, but I forgot my tea bag. And so I walked in, and he was standing there, him and his friend, and they were actually quite an ecstasy just to be in the restaurant. You could see they were already enlivened. So I showed him the paintings, and he engaged for another $350. And then he said to me, oh, what's that stuff on your forehead? So I just told him, well, actually, you know, I go to the Hare Krishna temple in the morning, and I forgot to wash it off. And he was asking about it, and I said, it's just a reminder that the body's been preaching to him a little bit. And then his other friend that he was with, he said, oh, do you know Tina Rabbit, who's Taitreya?
Mm.
He was his wife's cousin, so that was another little... And then that we were just talking away about, you know, a little bit about Krishna consciousness, and I gave him some prasadam because they were travelling up to Wellington, so I gave him some prasadam, and they took a couple of books, and I told him I was going to Melbourne. He said, oh, I'll let you know, and I'll see if I can meet up with you in Melbourne. And I was thinking just how amazing, you know, Krishna is, that he arranges that you believe is slightly sincere, because they took the books and they were really interested in the books, even though they'd engaged on paraphernalia, but by Krishna's arrangement, you know, you got to wash your tea like off, and you meet them at Gopal's, and, you know, somehow or other, if there's a little bit of sincerity there, then these people, you know, they get the chance to get Krishna.
Mm. Yes, very nice story. Shri Krishna Sankirtan Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Gaur Premanandi. So this evening, I'd like to read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is chapter 4, which is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. The verse number is 38. I'll read first the Sanskrit, then the translation and commentary. Nahi gyanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tat svayam yoga sansiddhi kalinatmani vindati. Lord Krishna said, in this world there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. Purport: when we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. As such, there's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage, and knowledge is the cause of our liberation. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service, and when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere, for he enjoys peace within himself. In other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. That is the last word in the Bhagavad Gita. Let's read the verse again. In this world, there's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So there are many departments of knowledge, so-called knowledge, in this world, in the schools and universities. The students are studying so many different kinds of subjects, but unfortunately, there is no department studying the science of the soul. What is the soul? What is the soul means? Who are we? Generally, sometimes when our devotees are on the streets and they're distributing books, and sometimes they'll ask people, do you know who you are? So they get many different kinds of answers. I'm English, I'm New Zealander, I'm American, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm a man, I'm a woman, like that. But these are actually not the proper answer. These are all temporary designations. The real answer is given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita that we are not the body, we are the soul within the body, the jiva atma. And for the soul, he says, there is never birth or death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. The soul is eternal, ever existing, and it is not slain when the body is slain. So this knowledge is not understood by the vast majority of people in this world, and they are not trained to understand this knowledge. But the Krishna consciousness movement is dedicated to spreading this transcendental knowledge in the society at large, and this is actually the most important of all knowledge. Krishna says, Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam, Pavitram Idam Uttamam, Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam, Susukum Kartum Avyayam. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. So this is a nice point. It is the purest knowledge because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. That means that we can really understand who we are practically by realization. That means you actually understand it as you act on that platform. It is not just some theoretical understanding. Realization, real, it becomes real. Not just a dream or some idea, but it becomes a real platform of action and life. So direct perception of the self by realization. When we say the self, that the word Atma is used, so the self means the soul, the jiva Atma. But there's another self that is the super self or Paramatma, super soul, and that is Krishna, who is residing in everyone's heart. Krishna says, Ishvara sarva bhutanam riddeshi arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudrani mayaya. He says to Arjuna, he says, I am seated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and I am directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of material energy. So just like a driver, he is seated in the car, he is seated in the machine, and he is driving it here and there. But sometimes he parks the car and he gets on. He is different from the car. But though sometimes a driver may identify with the car, isn't it? There's an accident and the driver doesn't get out. You hit me, and they have an argument like this. But, of course, they didn't hit each other, they hit the car. Or one example Prabhupada gave in Calcutta, the rickshaws are plying on the street, hand-drawn rickshaws. It's a very sort of antiquated mode of transport, you could say. And generally the streets are narrow also, so very congested. And one man, he had imported a Mercedes-Benz car, a very costly item, paying 300% duty, customs duty to the government. This means he was extremely wealthy. And he was driving on the streets of Calcutta with his newfangled Mercedes-Benz 500 SL or whatever. And he found to his dismay that the traffic was moving slowly due to congestion of rickshaws. So he became frustrated and angry, and he leapt out of the car and he shouted, "You rickshaw, get out of my way." So Prabhupada was pointing out that he is identifying that man is rickshaw and I am Mercedes. This is his false ego, puffed up. So this is the problem in material life. Everyone is identifying. They're identifying, you know, with their particular social position. I'm rich, he's poor, or whatever. And in this way, they're not understanding who they really are. So we really are not the body, not the machine, but we are the driver of the machine. So the soul is seated in this body, and according to our desires, we are performing different activities with this body. Of course, it's a very complex matter. There's the law of karma, and due to our previous activities, we have gotten this particular body. And of course, this body has a particular set of senses. It is born in a particular place, so it's conditioned in a particular way. So even one's desires that one may have in this life, they're very much influenced by what went on before. So in this way, karma is very intricate, and as one performs more activities, he becomes increasingly bound up in the actions and reactions of the law of karma. Mm. So like that, Krishna is explaining that the soul is situated in the body, but the soul is different from the body, but he's entangled. Mm. And he's very much subject to the laws of material nature. There are three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And these three are intertwined, and they are always influencing the living entities to perform different activities. If one is influenced by the mode of ignorance, then he's very much inclined to laziness, sleep, intoxication. Hmm? If he's influenced by passion, he's controlled by unlimited desires for wealth, fame, and different kinds of material facilities. And if he's influenced by the mode of goodness, he tends to be a more controlled person, interested in cultivation of knowledge and leading a more peaceful type of life. Mm. So these are the influence of modes of nature on the soul. So accompanying the soul on his journey through this material world is the super soul, Krishna. Mm. One example is given in the scriptures that there are two birds in a tree, and one bird is trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree. So he's eating the fruits. Sometimes the fruits are sweet, sometimes the fruits are bitter. And there's another bird who's simply watching him. So that eating bird, he never feels satisfied. He's always trying different fruits. And when he's tired of the fruits in one tree, he moves to the next tree. And there again he starts. And the other bird accompanies him and simply witnessing his activities. In this way, he's moving from one tree to another. Finally, he gives up trying to enjoy himself simply by eating the fruits, and he turns to the other bird and makes friendship with that bird. Then when he has friendship with that bird, he feels satisfied at heart, and he becomes happy. So this example illustrates how the living being is trying to enjoy the senses in this body and the sense objects through the senses, but he never feels satisfied. Sometimes there's a little pleasure, sometimes there's pain, and he goes through this lifetime in that way, and because he's got material desires in his consciousness, he's forced to take on another material body. So again, he's trying to enjoy the senses again and again. And all the time, the Lord of the Super Soul is simply witnessing or watching his activities. So that living being never becomes satisfied until he turns to the Lord, who is in the heart, and develops relationship with the Lord. And when he develops that relationship with Krishna, then he feels real satisfaction, happiness, bliss, peace. You see, his life becomes fulfilled. So this is the point in this verse also, that we have to acquire transcendental knowledge of who we are, who is Krishna, and what is our relationship with Krishna. And then we have to act on the basis of that relationship. Actually, there are three stages. One is called sambandha. Sambandha means to understand that we are all servants of Krishna. Next stage is called abhideya. That means to act on the basis of that understanding, to serve Krishna and perform our activities, all our activities, for his pleasure and satisfaction. Every thought, every word, and every deed. And the result of that is called prayojana. That one attains real love for Krishna. One becomes completely attached to Krishna. one can always remember Krishna, and one realizes that material happiness is something simply temporary, flickering. Sometimes there's little pleasure and sometimes there is great distress in this material world. So a wise man, he does not delight in sense pleasures. Rather, he takes pleasure from his relationship with Krishna. So this is a transcendental knowledge. And in order to attain that transcendental knowledge, one has to practice bhakti yoga or devotional service. The word yoga means to link or develop relationship with the Lord, and bhakti means through devotion. And Krishna says, bhaktya mam avijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tad anantaram. One can know the Supreme Lord as he is only by devotional service. And when one is fully conscious of the Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. And factually, one can enter the kingdom of God, or that one can come to the spiritual platform even while he's living in this world. One can be fully God conscious. And the result of that will be that after leaving this body, he will go back to the spiritual world. He will not have to take birth again in this material world. Krishna says, Abrahma Bhuvanal Loka Punar Avartino Arjuna Mamupecha Tukontaya Punarjanmana Vijate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, they are all places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains my abode, O Arjuna, never comes back again to this material world. So factually, there are 8,400,000 species of life in this material world, according to Vedic Shastra, Vedic literature. There are bird species, plant species, animal species, insect species, and human species also. So the soul, the living being, he can transmigrate through all these different kinds of species of life. Sometimes higher body, sometimes lower body, like that. So this is very complex. It's very difficult to break free from this cycle of birth and death. But among all these species, the human form of life is considered to be the most suitable for self-realization. So when one gets this human form of life, he should use it to the fullest extent to understand his spiritual position and put this knowledge into practice. Then he can make genuine progress. You will not find in animal society any scriptures or universities or religions or philosophies. The animals are simply engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, simply engaged in satisfying the senses. The human being naturally has to do these things, but he should do them in a civilized way. He should learn to control his senses and focus his attention on spiritual advancement. He should learn to minimize his material necessities so that he can increase the time spent on developing his relationship with Krishna or God. So bhakti yoga, devotional service, has got different aspects. There are 9 aspects of bhakti. And the first one is hearing. Hearing from Krishna, hearing from Krishna's representatives, the spiritual teachers, the devotees. We have to get knowledge from the proper source. Unless we are instructed properly, then how will we know the means to progress? Just like a child, if he's not trained properly in school, how will he know how to behave in society in the future? So in the same way, we need transcendental instruction. Therefore, Krishna advises us to approach a spiritual master, hear from him, and render service to him under his direction. In this way, one can progress in spiritual life. Especially in the present time, we should study Srila Prabhupada's books. See, this is Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is considered to be the ABC of spiritual life. And Srila Prabhupada has written many other books. He's translated the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam and also the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So these are very extensive literatures, many, many volumes all together. There's a great wealth of spiritual knowledge within these books. And in addition, Prabhupada has translated other books like Nectar of Devotion, Upadeshamrita, or Nectar of Instruction. So by reading these books, we can get the proper understanding. So that is Shravanam, hearing. The second aspect of bhakti is called Kirtanam, chanting. Chanting the holy names, just like we've been chanting together the Hare Krishna mantra. So these holy names, Krishna said, Nam-nama kari bahoda nija sarva-shakti. Lord Chaitanya has described it, that the Lord has invested all his transcendental energies in his holy names. These names are non-different from Krishna. So by chanting these holy names, one's consciousness becomes purified. But one's natural love for God, one's natural Krishna consciousness, it becomes revived. Now it is covered over. Due to taking birth in this material world, our spiritual understanding is covered over. But by chanting the holy names, it becomes uncovered, it becomes revealed, and a person becomes very bright-faced and very blissful and enthusiastic because he's getting some genuine spiritual experience. These are not ordinary mundane sounds, these holy names. They're actually spiritual sound vibrations. Mm. So that is chanting. Then next stage, smaranam, remembering Krishna. By hearing about Krishna and by chanting the names of Krishna, one can remember Krishna. And then there are other activities, huh? Archanam, worshipping the deities of the Lord. Vandanam, offering prayers to the Lord. Dasyam, rendering service to the Lord. These are all different aspects of devotional service. So if we engage and practice these different aspects of devotional service, our life can become fully spiritualized. In other words, every activity has some connection with Krishna, our thoughts and our words and our deeds. So many devotees, you can see, they have come to live in the temples of the Krishna consciousness movement. They are always busy in some activity for the pleasure of Krishna. They work very hard. Devotees are very enthusiastic. They may work for 7 days in a week, 365 days in a year, because they're getting some genuine spiritual experience and spiritual pleasure from this activity. It's not that devotees need a holiday. Or even if they go on a holiday, their holiday will be also working hard serving Krishna. Devotees don't like to be idle. They don't like to sleep in, you know, till 12 o'clock. But they rather get up 4 o'clock in the morning. If they go on holiday, they might get up at 3 o'clock instead of 4. Just to get some extra spiritual boost, spiritual enthusiasm. And then they always think how to be engaged in devotional service to Krishna. They don't like to be idle, because idle mind is a devil's workshop, it is said. If the mind is idle, then one may get so many unwanted desires coming into the mind, which may cause one again to become entangled in karma. So that's why the devotee fills his day up with Krishna conscious thoughts, Krishna conscious words, and Krishna conscious activities. In this way, by association with Krishna, the devotees develop very nice qualities, because Krishna is full of all good qualities. So by that association, the devotee also develops good qualities. And he becomes sober, his senses become controlled, he becomes peaceful, and he becomes genuinely blissful and happy. So this is the wonderful results of practicing Krishna consciousness, and this is open to all. It is the right of everyone to serve Krishna. This is our natural constitution position. No one is excluded. If one is not in Krishna consciousness, that's just because he doesn't really want to be. He doesn't have that real desire. But actually this knowledge is available to one and all. And if one takes it, then very quickly he can make spiritual progress. course, some may say that, well, it's difficult for me to live in the temple. I've got my family or different commitments in this world. All right. One can also practice at home. It's not obligatory that one lives in the temple. Of course, it's better for spiritual life because there's so much enthusiasm and good association. But even if one lives at home, he can chant Hare Krishna. He can study Prabhupada's books. He can keep some altar or some pictures of Krishna there. And also, Krishna has advised us that whatever we eat, we should offer to him. We should offer vegetarian foodstuff to him with devotion and then take the remnants or prasadam, mercy of Krishna. That can be done at home also. So there are many householder devotees of the Lord. See, they're living with their family. They're also serving Krishna. Whenever they can, they come to the temple. Sometimes they may come for the weekend, or sometimes the Krishna Conscious Movement organizes transcendental outings, like the Padayatra. This is organized by Christ Church Temple last year, especially our Yasoda Dula Prabhu, the inspiration behind the Padayatra. So that is going to take place again early next year in the North Island. So that is a kind of long holiday for the devotees. They go traveling from one time to the next, camping by the side of lakes and rivers, and they cooking on the campfire and distributing prasadam to whoever they meet, holding programs in all the towns, chanting in the streets like that. And this is a kind of 2-month-long festival. So this is a kind of holidays that can be experienced. This is the kind of holidays the devotees like to go on, chanting and glorifying Krishna. So in this way, everything is there in Krishna consciousness. Work is like play, you see. Work is like play. It is so blissful and enjoyable. So we invite everyone to kindly participate in the different programs of the Hare Krishna movement. And even you just participate a little bit, you will feel great transcendental happiness and joy from this experience. So thank you. Hare Krishna. Any question? Does anyone have a question? You can put your hand up if you have. Yes, sir. Well, that's a long story. I recommend everyone to read our Krishna book, because that story is related there. The Krishna book is Krishna book is the summary of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I request everyone to read the books of Srila Prabhupada so they can understand all these subject matters. The appearance of Lord Krishna is a very remarkable occurrence. Factually, the history to the appearance of Lord Krishna is that the earth planet was very disturbed due to the activities of demoniac persons, demoniac rulers. They were fighting, they had big armies, they were fighting, and so the earthly planet was disturbed. So there's a personality or goddess of the earth, she's called Bhumi. So she went to see Lord Brahma, who is considered as the head of the demigods in this universe. So Lord Brahma took her to visit Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu, he said that very soon Lord Krishna will appear on the planet Earth in order to relieve the Earth of the burden caused by these kshatriyas or these warriors. So he then instructed that all the different demigods, they should also appear in the Yadu dynasty on the earthly planet. So Lord Krishna was due to appear as the eighth son of Vasudeva and Devaki. And in previous births, actually, Vasudeva and Devaki, they had performed austerities so that Lord Krishna would become their son. And he agreed in three different births to become their son.